Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, welcome to Homo Sapiens. My name is William Young and... oh, there's a silence. Chris Sweeney is not here. He's in Barcelona with his mother. Sweeney?
I'm not wearing anything. Hoochie mama.
Explain to us where you are.
I'm in Barcelona. I'm in an Airbnb.
Spin it around, sister. Show us the room.
Okay, so.
Where's Anne? Oh, it's an apartment.
Kitchen.
Nice and light.
Sofa.
There's Anne.
Ma Sweeney. Now, just going to show you fridge, wine, milk, a lemon.
It's weird doing it. It's weird not having my podcast partner and pal here.
I feel a little bit like I'm in a space station and you're on Earth.
Yeah. Well, we can do the welcome now. Now we've got you. Welcome to Homo Sapiens.
Hola y bienvenido a Homo Sapiens.
Oh, you speak Spanish.
I think I do.
Who have we got this week in the Homo Sapiens chair?
In the dentist chair. We have got none other than Muslim drag queen Asifa Lahore. We're having a bit of a trailblazing time over here at Homo Sapiens HQ, aren't we?
She's Britain's first out Muslim drag queen.
I thought, okay, I've watched so many drag queens come on and do like sister act parodies, and I wonder what would happen if I go in on stage in a black burqa, rip it off, and there's next to nothing underneath.
You've probably seen her on a Channel 4 show. It was about Muslim drag queens.
I got quite a few death threats. Channel 4 had to like bump up security in their office. You know, we'll shut you down, we'll burn you down, there'll be riots.
This is at a time in her life when she was identifying as a gay man. She was in fact married to a guy. And by doing this drag act that is Asifa Lahore, she actually found her route that she wasn't a gay man. She realised that she was a woman and has now transitioned, or is still in the process, right?
Transitioning, yeah.
11 months into my transition, I feel I'm at a point where I can walk into the mosque as a woman. But will the community, will the mosque accept me?
So our conversation with Asifa Lahore is coming up. I must say you're looking very handsome.
Stop it. So are you.
You look rested. I've still got makeup on from doing Sunday brunch.
Oh, how was that?
Where do I begin?
Go on.
There were two lovely actors, Daisy Waterstone and Callum Woodhouse, who are in the Durrells, the Gerard Durrell sort of thing.
Love that show.
Which I didn't know was on, and they were so funny. They were so funny. Tracy Ann Oberman, who is an actor, and she was very funny as well. Me. And then George Ezra. So, let me take you through it.
Go on.
I did not recognise George Ezra.
Oh.
He looks very different in the flesh. And so I said...
Really?
Hello, I'm Will. He said, I'm George. I said, what do you do? And he said, I do music. And I was like, oh, how great. And then slowly it dawned on me and I was like, I think that might be George Ezra. Then I said, what's your name? And he was like, it's George Ezra. And I went, I know who you are. Anyway, that was a bit eggy, but he is really lovely. He's the nicest guy in the world.
I'm a bit in love with him.
He's got a lovely voice.
Has his own podcast.
Well, that's when things got a little bit rocky. Because I said, George, between you, me and the gatepost and a Brit Award, I said, George, you're a lovely chap. I said, but I think it's time for you to stop what you're doing now.
Back up, sister.
He was very nice. And basically, that show is the longest show in history.
Is it?
Shit the bed. You get there at 8:30, you go on at 9:30. I joked at 11:15 and said to the producer, I think, I was like, how much longer have we got to go? We can't be that long. And she went, 12:30. I went, I was like, seriously? 12:30. So that's what I've done. And then I've just been weeding and putting down the beginnings of horse manure on my flowerbed and cleaning up lots of dog poo.
I'm starting to get my head a little bit into the garden, actually. I've had a look. My hellebores are out.
You can get cream for that.
You can get...
Oh, someone's been straining on the loo.
Yeah, I'm starting to get into the garden, but I have had a whistle stop week, let me tell you.
Oh, go on. So you went to...
I went to Ireland, Northern Ireland. I've been to Barcelona. I went to a memorial service.
No, well, who was that?
A friend of the family who I loved dearly. He was my friend's dad, who was a big part of my life growing up. He very sadly died. And we had a sort of memorial service for him, which was actually in a pub. It was like a sort of, there were like loads of photos of his life, loads of speeches. It was great.
Did you cry there? Or did you cry afterwards?
I don't know why that's funny. It's
some sort of connotation about crying after sex or something. that's where my head went. I don't know where yours went.
I have never cried after sex. Is that...
Okay. I think that means you're psychotic if you do. That's what my brother says.
I always heard it meant you're mad if you didn't enjoy having a poo. Was that a thing that went round your school when you were younger? Did mine?
I love having a poo.
It's the best, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
The spring in your step afterwards. Morning!
Yes, like that. Great. Did you cry there?
I didn't. I wanted to cry, but I didn't. I'm not very good at crying.
I find it very hard to cry at a funeral, because if I go, it then goes. And I know that's not bad, but I just don't want to be you know, I'd rather have a good old grieving cry on my own.
On all fours, one of those.
On all fours.
Yeah.
Shit, me, I've had some good cries over the years. Once I popped a blood vessel. That was
really?
The best one, yeah.
are we still talking about having a poo? Are you doing a show at the moment or anything?
Well, I am doing a show. I don't want to go on about it. I'm doing Strictly Ballroom, the musical, in the Piccadilly Theatre. It starts when this goes out, which will be Thursday. So for listeners, it will be starting tonight. But it starts in four days' time. It's been an interesting week. I've got a whole load of new dialogue to learn for the opening. And there's still a few songs to learn. But this is always the way with new shows. And am I stressed, listeners? I've sort of gone beyond stress now to either like complete freeze or just like, let's just get on with it.
You just go, let's do this.
Oh, let's just do this.
There also comes a time in preparation for something where you go, this just needs to happen now. You just need to do it.
It just needs to happen. I'm just not very good at learning words.
You've mastered English language. Can you give me a little insight to one of your lines?
Wreck off, charm. I've moved it from Australian to English back to Australian again. So who knows, it might be German by Thursday.
Really?
No one seems to be saying anything. So I think I'll just keep on going.
If in doubt, go with French.
We should probably do like competitions for people to come and see Strictly, shouldn't we?
Yes. If you can draw a picture of a kestrel, you get 43 free tickets to Strictly front row. You get the whole front row.
Has it been nice to be with your mum?
It's been so nice. We've had such a laugh. We've hung out, we've explored, tried to go to the flea market today. It was shut. Ugh, heartbreaking. But there's a big one tomorrow. So we're going to go absolutely wild in the aisles.
Don't forget your friend.
Don't forget your little friend who always gets you nice little presents.
I'd like something for my dressing room, please.
Oh, for Strictly?
Yeah, and it can be...
Great. Do we need soft furnishings?
I've already ordered a sort of day-beddy, Indian-y kind of thing. The thing is, I don't have a loo, so I have to keep on weeing in the sink. And that's annoying.
Especially when you need a poo, I bet.
I do that out the window.
Straight down on, what is it, Tottenham Court Road?
Oh, it's in such a lovely place. Please come and see me, one, because I'm having a slow breakdown, and two, because it's really lovely round there.
Of course I'm going to come. I'm going
to
come.
Can you come and see it sooner rather than later to tell me what you think?
Okay,
and be honest. This is the be honest of the same as what you really think of the person that I'm dating. I'm like giving you carte blanche. Don't say you need to give up because I've got 4 months of doing it. But you can come in and say, you need to try more of that. You need to do more of that. Why are you doing a Greek accent?
okay, I'm going to come and I'm going to be honest. And do you know what? I'm going to give you one little extra on top.
Present.
Live feedback.
Oh my God, give me live feedback. Because
no, over, left a bit, left a bit. And also because remember that I will be with a whole row of competition winners who've drawn a picture of a kestrel for us.
Twitter questions.
We were thinking about some of the life-changing decisions Asifa, our guest this week, has made. And we thought we would ask our listeners, what's the best decision you've ever made?
David Law at... I feel I know that name. Cutting toxic people out of my life. That's a very good one.
Yes, there's that saying where they say, think about how you feel after you've been with someone. If you feel good after seeing them, they're good for you. And if you don't...
Shut up, I'm thinking.
They're not good for you. Paul Parker has been in touch, who also tweeted me the other day, saying, when my partner and I decided to adopt our son. Because Paul got in touch to say that it doesn't need to cost loads of money to do surrogacy, Chris. You could simply adopt. So thank you, Paul, for that. I also had another message from Louise, who is a friend, saying that she's met some people, surrogacy news. Some friends of hers have had a kid through surrogacy in Canada, and it was a lot cheaper. So I'm going to talk to her. We're going to have a coffee about it.
Oh my God, this is brilliant.
Sheila has got the right idea to retire and become a lady who lunches. What is yours?
What is my best decision? Leaving Strictly. Can I tell you
really?
Why?
Yeah.
I can tell you why. Because it was extremely empowering to know that I never have to stay in any position if I don't want to. It's quite liberating to go, I don't need to stay here. I left a ballroom dancing show and it was actually surprisingly liberating. Because then, after that, I realised, actually, I don't have to stay and do other things I don't like. So then I left the job. It's like, brilliant.
Oh, left pop.
Yeah, it's just like, I'm just going to do things I like. Really very empowering. That and probably buying my first pair of secateurs.
Was a landmark moment for you.
I can do topiary like Vidal Sassoon.
Really? I didn't realise you toped.
I'm going to call my company Utopia.
Can that be the name of our garden centre?
Should we have a garden centre?
Yeah.
I don't know much about plants.
That's what it says above the door. What's been the best decision you've ever made?
Robert at Morgue 505. I always find it very difficult reading out these things. To realise I'm gay. Came out in my late 30s, build a new life and follow my dreams. Can't say better than that, can you?
Thomas Dernley Davidson has says, going to therapy, it's long, slow, expensive process, but totally worth it. Thomas, good on you and quite right.
Mr. Chris, that's not you, is it? Mr. P500, that's a printer, isn't
yeah.
it? To get a cleanser. Oh no, to get a cleaner. Sherry is absolutely marvellous. Well, that's name check and everything. What's been the best decision that you've made, Chris, apart from doing a podcast about your friend?
One of the best decisions I made was to marry my husband. Or more to the point, was to pluck up the courage to go and talk to him because I fancied him. And I wouldn't have previously. And then I decided, I'm going to do this. So I went over and said hi. But I tried to kiss him, do you remember? And we called him, who's the one who denies Jesus 3 times in the Bible? Because he turned me down 3 times.
Paul. Doubting Thomas or denying Paul
or something, isn't it? I've had quite a religious week, actually. My Uber driver in Spain, here where I am, was called Jesus. And so my text message on the screen said, Jesus is on his way.
Coming up now is our conversation with Asifa Lahore. Now, not only is she the first Muslim drag queen in Britain, she's someone who is transitioning, and she is very open about who she is and what she wants in her life. But did you notice, Chris, that she enjoyed the samples of Aesop that I was giving her, particularly the hand cream?
I recall that.
It was a cunning little trick. So as you listen to this, think of beautifully rosemary-scented hand cream. Chris ate it, which I thought was a bad thing, but I didn't tell him.
Chris did what? Sorry, it cut out.
Nothing. Here's our interview with Asifa Lahore.
I haven't been to the mosque since I started my transition. So it's interesting because mosques are segregated. So you have the female parlour and the male parlour. It's interesting now because now I'm talking about it. 11 months into my transition, I feel I'm at a point where I can walk into the mosque as a woman, but will the community, will the mosque accept me? They won't bat an eyelid, maybe. Yeah. They may not even notice. They may not, you know, if I walk in with my hair covered. They may not even notice. They might just think I'm a woman.
What I hear often is people say, I'm a transgender woman, and I always knew that. How often or did you ever question yourself?
It's really interesting because,
I
started my transition at the age of 33. That's fairly uncommon.
Is that considered late?
That is considered late, I mean, especially now. I mean, when you look at trans children coming out, like, or identifying as trans really young and, you know, needing sort of blockers during their teenage years, or when you look at sort of gay children coming out as young as 10, 11, 33 is considered like ancient, God help us.
Can I tell you a quick question?
Go on.
A quick thing I went to, I told you when I went to this club, it's the Eagle.
Vauxhall.
And I was 31.
Okay.
And someone came up to me. He went, oh, how old are you? And I said, I'm 31. He went, oh, that's okay.
Like it was such a bad thing.
Do you know what I mean? I was like, wow. Oh, dear.
Oh, goodness me.
And it begins.
Yeah. So are we going to have sex or not? What does that mean?
Yeah. For... Is everyone okay in a good way?
Did you know who you were? Because it sounds like he didn't.
I don't know if it mattered for his ageist, his ageist outlook on gay men. Maybe it was just me. You were saying that it's late to be... So
yes.
Was there a lot of questioning from age 11 when you were saying you were in Pakistan to then coming back?
I mean, God, I mean, my journey is, I think... so specific because I've grown up at a time when I felt very politicalized or politicized is the right term, just for having so many different identities, you know, first identifying being, you know, essentially born into a South Asian British background, being brought up as a Muslim, identifying as gay in the UK. And I'm also severely sighted as well. So I've got a lot of different sort of identities that many people say shouldn't fit together. Mm. But actually, if we take intersectionality on board, actually, here I am.
Wow.
So when I started questioning myself, it was more about sexuality than gender. I always looked feminine to everybody.
Mm.
You know, the eyes, the bone structure. I didn't have a lot of facial hair at all. I didn't have... My frame is very slender. And going to the gay clubs in my early 20s, again, I was treated very much as the effeminate one.
Mm.
In my relationships with gay men, I was treated as the woman. I was desired because of my femininity. So I never really questioned it. Until I was 27, and as a joke, I decided to do drag. I entered like Drag Idol, which is like a national drag competition in the UK. It's hilarious. And interestingly enough, in the history of that competition, I was the first Asian person and first Muslim person to enter the competition. And it was actually that competition that labeled me Britain's first out Muslim drag queen.
Weren't you terrified when you first did up?
Honey, I don't know about you, but if I'm going to enter a competition, I want to win.
Shit the bed, yeah? I'm like, you know what I mean?
So, you know, at the time, like, being Muslim was so, like, there. Everyone was talking about the burqa. And I thought, okay, I've watched so many drag queens come on and do, like, sister act parodies and whatnot. I wonder what would happen if I go in on stage in a black burqa, rip it off, and there's next to nothing underneath.
That's amazing.
And I divided opinions straight down the line. For example, a lot of people questioned, and this is the LGBT community we're talking about, why is a drag queen wearing a burqa? It's offensive. Which is very interesting because my argument was offensive to who exactly? I'm Muslim, I'm a drag queen, I'm an artist, and, you know, I could say exactly the same thing about a nun's outfit or a drag queen, I don't know, taking the piss or doing a parody on the Pope or something.
Do you think people had become over-sensitized to especially
the Muslim faith? Do you think people were over, because they were like, oh no, it's fine to Catholics, it's fine to Christians, it's fine to Jewish people, but no, you can't do... Do you think that was a sort of...
Yes, I think there was a lot of that at the time. I mean, this is 2012 we're talking about, so, you know, a good 6 years ago. And obviously, I think, you know, the way the world is, the way Muslims are portrayed, especially definitely at the time, I wouldn't say so much now, I think that stigma's definitely broken down.
Did people think, how can someone be Muslim and a drag queen and gay?
Yes.
At that time, identifying as a gay man?
Definitely.
And did you have a lot of debate about that? A lot of...
God, I mean, I think my drag act was a culmination of my frustration of being a 20-something gay Muslim, LGBT Muslim, because all through my clubbing experiences or, you know, accessing services for the LGBT community, I always felt I had to defend myself for identifying as Muslim. Definitely. I mean, God, I would be at... Do you remember the Astoria?
Yeah.
Hello. So I used to be at the Astoria dancing my ass off.
name scratched into a few cubicles.
Oh, when do you know I was at the Astoria?
To your arrival.
Camp attack days on the balcony. Literally, I would just be dancing my head off. And at the same time, while I was dancing, I'd be debating with, you know, the queen next to me about why I was going to the mosque the next morning or something. And, you know, I definitely think there's much more, you know, yeah, exactly. You know, us Muslims, we're used to kneeling.
You find yourself, so what happened with the, you got to the final, and you said, and I heard you say it was split down the middle and what people thought maybe. So what happened at the, where was the final?
So the final was at the Two Brewers in Clapham. Great place.
Stones throw away from my house. Still never been there.
No reason. Really?
No. Banned.
Are we allowed to say why?
Banned by sight.
On principle.
No. Yeah, so it was at the Two Brewers.
So, you know, half the panel were like, she's amazing. You must give her the crown. You must. This is the future of drag. You know, here is someone really taking drag on board and really pushing boundaries, both performing-wise, both singing-wise, and both, you know, politics-wise as well. It's obviously someone who's using the art form of drag to really make a stand. Mm. So the prize was that all the participating venues would give you a gig, right? Which is great, you know, let's be honest. But the other half were like, well, can Asifa's act transcend beyond London? London would get it. Would the rest of the UK get it? Which is really interesting because fast forward to, say, now, you know, I think we've become so evident now of our London bubble. You know, if we bring Brexit and politics and whatnot into it, we do live in a very diverse bubble in London.
But isn't that, I would think, that within the LGBT community, because you'd be going to LGBT clubs, no?
Yeah.
That it would be a safe place, I guess. Yes.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Yeah. You know, also, like, fine, it's contentious, you know, a drag act in a burqa, but it's also, what I think is amazing is there's going to be people out there who want to see that, and you represent, like, a lifeline to them to be able to see what they feel within themselves being represented.
Yeah.
Not everything is done as a show, you know what I mean? But that's why they should be saying, you've got to go out there and do it.
Yeah,
it's why you should get the prize, not why you shouldn't. I don't understand that.
Yeah. I did win the bronze medal that year, so I came third, and it just allowed me to really get my name out there, and I just began sort of using social media. Mm. BBC Three got in touch to suggest a programme that they run called Free Speech. You know, they obviously saw that I was very vocal about debating, and I raised a question about, you know, when will homosexuality be accepted in Islam? And for that episode, it became the most debated. What they do in Free Speech is they have like 5 questions which they debate every episode, and my question was the most hotly debated on social media for that episode. Now, it came to the broadcast, and that particular episode, I think the BBC obviously pulled some strings, which was great. was hosted in the Birmingham Central Mosque.
Right.
An hour before the broadcast, literally, the mosque literally threw a spanner in the works and said, look, if we go ahead with this debate, there may be riots outside the mosque. Because it's, you know, the first time this something like this is being discussed on a worldwide stage, let alone in Britain. The papers just got a hold of it and were like, you know, for a programme called Free Speech, why was this question censored? And that really just brought me to, I think, me and the question and the sort of diversity around being LGBT really was thrown out there.
What opposition did you come up against when you first were doing the Asifa Lahore Act? Have you experienced a lot of opposition?
I have. I mean, you know, at the extreme end of it, I've experienced death threats. There are certain sections of London that I still feel a little bit wary and intimidated by every time I go.
Really?
You know, there's certain, with the rise of the acid attacks in East London, mm-hmm. but at the back of my mind, because I faced death threats, because I faced very much a backlash from the conservative wing of my community, there is this voice in me that sort of always makes me sort of look over my shoulder, or there's always this part of me that's a bit on edge. So yeah, the death threats,
are they anonymous?
Is it, yeah, I mean it? Anonymous, it's not, is it letters, tweets,
Online abuse? Yes, a lot of online abuse. I mean, tweets, stuff. I mean, you just need to go on my Instagram just to see the horrificness that is posted. And
shouldn't that be police?
I think it should be. I personally leave it on. I'm not one of these people that feel that I want to delete those.
No, I think that's great.
Because exactly, I leave it on because I want people to see the shit that's out there. Mm. And also I feel that if I just delete something, that I'm sort of getting rid of the problem rather than, because I think that if something's out there, it makes it so much more visible and it can be dealt with.
Have you ever had to bring in the police?
Yes. Yes.
And how have they...
Oh, God, the police have been so supportive. I mean, at the time that I was doing Muslim Drag Queens, a Channel 4 documentary, there was potential of backlash really taking place. And the police really protected me.
Was there a specific event that happened?
Yes, I got quite a few death threats around that. Channel 4 had stuff, they had to like bump up security in their Horsefree Road office.
Why? Because they were getting threats.
Yeah, Channel 4 got
saying
threats.
Saying things too. Like,
you know, we'll shut you down, we'll burn you down, there'll be riots, you know, all sorts of things, you know.
And what do you say to people who say that, you know, it's sacrilegious to be doing what you're doing and stuff? You know, is there a reasonable discourse you can ever have with someone about it? Or
when it comes to someone of faith, what I say is, you're going to go into your grave or be cremated, as am I. Concentrate on your life, because, you know, why the hell are you concentrating on mine?
Yeah.
I'm going to use that.
That's a t-shirt.
Yeah.
That is a freaking t-shirt.
Yeah, that is. In any sort of community, I think a lot of people worry about what other people think. Mm-hmm. You know, if we bring in sexuality or if we bring in faith, we're always worrying about how we're looking or what the other person's thinking of us, or not being able to express ourselves fully, like full-blown self-expression, rather than sort of, you know, why do 70% when you can do 100%?
Do you think that full-blown expression, I can really relate to that, it doesn't happen because we're worrying about what other people will think?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
So how have you how did drag take you to finding your true self, I guess, to wanting to transition and realising?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. When I first tried on a dress and I tried on a hairpiece and makeup, something just clicked. I just loved the feeling of being a woman, or people perceiving me as a woman. And yes, it was for performance. Yes, it was, you know, my stage acts, my makeup, my hair, everything's exaggerated left, right and centre. Mm. And, you know, I am a proper drag queen. And I think it definitely took, you know, between the ages of 27 and 33, it took me a long time to bulk up the courage to really admit to myself that every night that I took my makeup off, or every night that I took my heels and my clothes and my hairpieces off, a huge part of me would die. Mm. You know, to medically transition, to start the process, it's a massive decision. It's not one that anybody should take lightly. I'm very much about, you know, being yourself. But at the same time, there are a lot of health risks. And, you know, playing about with your body hormonally can be detrimental.
How are you feeling 11 months into it?
Oh, 11 months into it, I have no regrets. No regrets whatsoever. My body is constantly changing. I've got very blossoming, perky boobs, which, you know, I'm having lots of fun with. You know, I have to say my transition so far has been relatively easy. My testosterone is literally next to nothing. I'm very lucky in the sense that, and I hate using this word, but I have passing privilege. You know, when I'm not in makeup or when I am in makeup, if I'm walking down the street, no one would bat an eyelid. Mm. Now, for me personally, my onstage persona is so... The Asifa Lahore you see on stage, both visually and content-wise, is so different to the Asifa Lahore that you see day in, day out.
Yeah.
And for me, it's very much an onstage persona. My drag act is very much me using hair and makeup and exaggerating my body frame in order to harness a power that I feel that I don't have in a day-to-day capacity.
In quite a unique position, I feel, actually.
Yeah.
Because it's like just hearing you talk and hearing your story, it feels like you're kind of the best example of British drag.
Yes.
Because of where we're at now. Because I'm personally so proud of our diversity of cultures in Britain. Mm. I don't see anywhere as diverse as here.
No, not at all.
And the more I get to learn as a citizen, the more, just as a layman, the more that I see, the more visibility of every different culture there is, I learn and I grow. I just feel more, I just kind of love being British more and more.
Oh,
so I feel like someone like yourself is like the best version of where drag is at. No?
Thank you. I mean, it's a huge thing for me to take,
Did you find it difficult? Because hearing you talk, it felt like it was accepted that you might wear makeup and wear a dress or when you were young. How are your family now?
So when I came out, when I was 22. We don't have words in Punjabi or Urdu or Hindi for gay. It's just I said it in Urdu. But when it came to the word gay, I just used the word gay.
Hmm.
You know, because there's nothing else. Hmm. So my mum and dad didn't quite understand. They thought there was something sort of medically wrong with me. I remember my dad asking me whether my equipment was okay. And, you know, I was asked so many personal questions. And I think, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I do feel like, you know, there's certain things I can't discuss with my parents.
Yeah.
So I was taken to the doctor. I got counselling. I got to meet other LGBT Muslims. I know it's going to sound like the biggest cliche, but I thought I was the only one up until that point. I thought I was the only gay Muslim in the whole world.
The cliches are cliches because they're true.
Yeah, yeah.
And how did it feel then to meet other gay Muslims?
Oh, it was...
and to have a chance to talk.
Just everything. It was like a relief, a massive relief. Like, I felt the isolation just wasn't there anymore.
Mm.
It just felt, oh my God, there's other people just like me.
Can I ask you about your club night?
Yes. Okay. So, I run an LGBT Bollywood club night.
Amazing.
Called Disco Rani. Rani means queen, so Disco Queen. So it's on every third Friday at the Boston Music Room in Tufnell Park, which is just after Camden.
We're coming.
Can we come?
Of course you can.
Love to
come.
It's very, how can I say? It's very Kylie meets Bollywood.
Are you feeling a big
Like you're filling a big gap for the community there. Because there's Club Kali as well, isn't
yes,
there? Like LGBT,
which is great, yeah.
LGBT
Gay, Asian
night,
Bollywood music, pop music, yeah.
But there's not a lot, right?
No, I mean, it's interesting. In the last 4 or 5 years, with so much more awareness, with so much more media exposure, I think diversity around the LGBT community just skyrocketed. And the Asian and Muslim LGBT segment feel much more confident in coming out to the clubs. Mm. They feel much more confident. I mean, if you go down GAY Bar now, you'll see like the color, the diversity you'll see is just phenomenal. Every week you can go to a gay Bollywood nightclub up and down the country. There's stuff in Manchester, Birmingham, London. And if I'm not mistaken, there's a new, in March, there's a new one opening in Glasgow.
What do you think will be next for you?
What's next for me? So I would love to do Eurovision.
That's an amazing idea.
Because I think Britain's first out Muslim drag queen representing Britain at Eurovision right now, with everything that's going on in the world.
It's crazy.
It would just set the tone. I you know, with Brexit, with terrorism, with everything that's out there, that's what I'd love to do.
If you do that, please, can I make the documentary about it?
Of course you can.
Fucking, that's what kind such of, a great idea.
What kind of song would you do?
Okay, I'd either go with your power ballad. Mm-hmm. You know, something not about world peace, but definitely something about striving from within yourself. Or I'd go for an up-tempo house number with Bollywood themes in it.
There's a costume in there.
Yeah,
that very visual.
Yeah,
that's some
what
changes
I'm,
as well.
Exactly.
Sure, I've gone to something else.
Yeah,
I've gone into something else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Boom, there's Will Young as a backing dancer.
Hang on, what? He's taking the mic. What? Mic?
Oh, he's singing.
He's stealing it.
So that's sort of, I'd play on my strengths. I'd definitely play on my strengths.
How do you orchestrate that?
It's, well, who do I speak to at the BBC?
Yeah,
it's that kind of thing.
Paging BBC. I think.
Are you still use your pager?
No.
That was Asifa Lahore. I am so excited about her doing Eurovision, aren't you?
I think she'd kill it.
Do you?
I like that one that won a few years ago. Fly like an eagle. Oh no, spread your wings, something. Soaring, yeah, soaring like an eagle. Something yes. about eagles. Poor where eagles dare. Angela Eagles.
Rise what? Like a phoenix.
Rise like a phoenix, close to an eagle. Would you do a ballad or a dance hit if you were entering Eurovision?
Well, because I don't have a pop career, I would struggle to not try and shove my entire desired pop career into one song. So I think I'd just go crazy and I'd have all the backing dancers, lasers, big dance beat, the whole shebang. You know what I mean? Because I'd be a pop star for one night, so it's just let you go for it.
I'm seeing you as sort of Gina G on crack.
I saw Gina G on my birthday when I was about 13.
I would sing Puppet on a String, and I would do it exactly how it was done originally. I want to say by Sandy Shaw or something like that.
Not Pinocchio.
Oh, I could do it as Pinocchio. That'd yes. be brilliant. And my nose could slowly get longer and longer and longer.
That's a great idea and so achievable.
Maybe we should enter it together.
And I could be like the Posh Spice who doesn't really sing.
And I could be Sporty Spice and I'll try and do a backflip and finally try and get it right.
And we need two other members. So if you can send a picture of a drawing of a falcon to hello at famousaprenspodcast.com, you can be in our Eurovision entry band, no?
Why have you got fixated with the drawing of a falcon kestrel?
Because it just always reminds me that you drew a picture of a falcon. Do you remember? It was an eagle, though. It was an eagle.
Oh, when I was in treatment.
Were you in your house in Oxford?
No, I remember that. I did it in treatment. Thanks a lot, Chris, for actually making light of something that was extremely important in my developmental stage.
I can only apologise. And it was a beautiful picture.
It was, wasn't it? I copied it from the front cover of Country Life.
Yeah? I've lost you.
Sorry, I was just pretending that the screen had frozen. Have you ever done that?
You're like a mime artist.
This is what my acting's like. What have you got on this week before we finish and sing our merry song to the listeners?
I'm doing Easter at my house. It's going to be a roast chicken.
Yeah.
Have you heard this hoopla about the avocado egg?
No, what?
So there's Waitrose do an avocado egg that is the prize Easter egg. My mother physically pushed someone out of the way in Waitrose to get the last one.
But what do you mean an avocado egg? It's an egg.
It's a chocolate egg, but it looks like an avocado.
Oh, I want one of those.
She's got one, and it's going to the highest bidder.
Is it a rarity?
Apparently, they've run out everywhere. So when she saw one, we went to this memorial service in Notting Hill.
I didn't stop her.
I know. She's like all sad, sad, sad. Suddenly, eyes lit up, dashing like Limpford Christie down R4. With an army roll, clutching it to her body. Clutch in tight, roll. And then was in and out the self-checkout within 4 minutes.
Bloody hell. My dad always says thank you to the self-checkout. It's really sweet. If you have any views, please contact us at hello@homosapienspodcast.com or tweet us at Will Young with the hashtag Homo Sapiens. And we'll go through your emails and tweets on Homo Sapiens Extra, which goes out every Tuesday. And if you go to Apple Podcasts and rate and review on the Extra show, I will be sending you out a t-shirt. Chris, I sent all the t-shirts out this week. I think because we're in Barcelona, we know what our final tune is, don't we?
What is it?
I'll be the opera singer. You be Freddie Mercury.
I don't know this song.
Barcelona.
Homo sapiens.
I'm the opera singer. Homo sapiens.
Oh, I don't know this song.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay, let's just do Puppet on the String. Oh, we'll do Gina G. Homo sapiens.
Homo sapiens more.
Tomo, Homo sapiens.
Homo sapiens.
Ni le poix.
Powered by Spirit Studios.